Pot Radio Network is pleased to present Encounter, a public service program here on KSIV that spotlights local Christian events and provides information and resources to enrich your lives. And now, your Encounter host, Judy Redlich.
Critical race theory. What do you know about it? What do you know about social and emotional learning? And how are these detrimental and impacting our children beyond the classroom? I'm Judy Redlich, talking about those topics today on Encounter. Van Harvey is my guest. He's a software developer, but he's a father, and he's been involved in educational issues since 2008. This is Encounter. I'm Judy Redlich. Welcome, Van.
Thank you very much.
Van, tell us a little bit about how you got involved in educational issues.
First, initially, was in the late 90s with my kids' schooling and trying to figure out what the heck was going on with math sentences and things like that. And the more I got involved in it and looking into it, studying it, the more alarming it became. And I became actively involved in issues probably around outside my kids' schools around 2008. I got involved in what was going on with Race to the Top and Common Core and all that fun
stuff. Oh, yeah, Common Core. That was 2008. It seems like it shouldn't have been that long ago, but I guess it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. We had the HB 1490 work group in Missouri. I was on one of the groups, the History 6 to 12, rewriting the curriculum framework, and along with Dr. Mary Byrne. And that was an experience to see what was going on. It wasn't real encouraging. We did our best.
So when did the education change for kids in our nation from what we knew when we grew up as kids? Mm-hmm. Or as our children now know?
What we knew of education seemed to change around the 90s as what became CRT and SEL began to move into it. But what really started, I mean, you can go back to in 1909, the guy who was the father of the school system layout, superintendent structures, and so forth, he wrote in a book at the time boasting that each year the child's coming to belong more to the state and less to the parent. And that was something he was very happy and positive with.
In 1909? That's a long time ago, more than 100 years ago.
Yeah. And through his ideas and John Dewey, who he was a follower of, and a number of others, and especially in the 50s, as Bloom's taxonomy became the base model that teachers' colleges kind of formed off of. He had the idea that a child doesn't really get to higher order thinking until they no longer believe in right and wrong.
What?
Just kind of measure and weigh and balance different options. And that really began to kick into gear. SEL started from a guy named Comer, who kind of put psychology into the classroom. And it seemed on appearances to work, but he later admitted that out of the 600 and something schools where it was tested in, only a third of them showed any measurable results. And those are pretty questionable as well. But it got popularity, it got spin, it got media coverage, social thinking, social intelligence, and all of that. And it spun up in the early 90s into an organization called CASEL, that Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning. And 94 is when they put together. And if you want a rabbit hole of real strangeness, do some searching around the Fetzer Institute, Lucius Trust, and UNESCO, and that will make your eyes just bug out.
And how do you spell that?
The Fetzer Institute is F-E-T-Z-E-R. And that was the institute that organized the first meetings of what would become CASEL.
Way back in the 90s, you know, I love it that you're talking about the educational history here. And I hope our listeners will appreciate this, too.
Yeah. And what we think is happening just now as a new development has been percolating and embedded into the system for decades and decades. Back at the very start, when Massachusetts first put in the first state-sponsored educational system, the nation, 1833, I think, something like that, within 3 years, they tried their best to repeal it because they saw it as a way of centralizing power and monopoly into a few hands. It was contrary to everything America was based upon. And unfortunately, they didn't quite get the job done. And it's been growing and doing its thing ever since. And its point is to change the way that people think into the new man who's focused on the group, you know, goals and ideals, and not thinking about, as Bloom said, you know, you got to be higher order. You can't be thinking about right and wrong. We just got to hit the marks, get things done. And there are consequences to that. We are experiencing right now.
Explain.
Well, when you have, for instance, how social emotional learning puts it.
What is that? Explain that a little bit.
What it is to try to say that there's other ways of looking at what is wrong and you know, the old idea of character development. Well, we've got a more kind of sciencey approach to it.
Are you talking about relativism?
Oh, it's definitely embedded in there. There is definitely involved at the very root that my truth is not your truth and they're both okay. It all rests on the differences between how people used to be taught, Aristotle's first rule of thought, that something cannot both be and not be in the same context and time. The social epistemology, really, is what they outwardly call it, is more along the lines of what is worthwhile is what advances the agenda of the group. And that is as real as you need to worry about. And everything builds up that, obviously, relativism and so forth. And so they take what FEL does, and it's all of our lawmakers who think they're promoting something really good and making it possible, is built on a castle's, they call their core five way of how they're going to impact student thought. And instead of character, they're teaching them these skills. Well, unfortunately, you know, character is a quality of the person you become. You engrave it upon your soul. You become that person. But what their skills do is teach the student how to manipulate both others and themselves into aligning with what this stated aspiration is, whether it be diversity, equity, inclusion, and so forth, and actively get involved. And very strange things come out of that. When we were doing the curriculum framework, one of the things that were given to us as an ideal was from California's framework. They call it the 3 C's, career, college, and civic readiness. And it's got some target marks. And these are reflected in our current documents for DESE, for Missouri, that something equivalent to they have for kindergarten through second grade, expectations are that the student will be able to identify and explain a range of local, regional, and global problems and some way in which they can try to address these problems. They want them to be activists, starting from that point, that early on. And when you have these kids being taught, not what is right and wrong, but these things that you should be doing to make the world better, that has some big effects on how people behave and how they respond to any kind of an argument. There's nothing to grasp onto there and reason with. It's, I'm for this, I'm against that. And that's what we see.
Van, what are the five tenets of the core system?
The Castle Five, surrounding their core of social and emotional learning, is self-management, responsible decision-making, relationship skills, social awareness, and self-awareness, which sound very fine and noble and almost kind of like character traits. And they have those fit in with a number of rings that they want you to think about these skills being applied in the classrooms, in the schools, to families and caregivers, and out into communities. So they want this to be more than just the school. They want it to be involve the entire community in life. And the problem with that is what they mean by self-management is not doing what is best for the right reasons, but what aligns with this particular group need and activity or another. It's not looking for virtue and character. It's looking for activism. It's looking for putting kids into advancing political positions and in a way that their entire sense of self-esteem, or lack of a better word, is tied to that. And they don't give them the ability to evaluate and reason and discuss, you know, what are the roots here. It's just, this is good, that is bad. How dare you question it?
So there's no reason behind why they should say that. It's just what they should do according to this Common Core system.
Right.
Wow. We're talking with Van Harvey, and he is a father who got involved in this whole educational issue study because he had kids in schools and was wondering, what are they really learning? We're going to come back, Van, after a break, and we're going to talk a little more about the Common Core and also critical race theory. The Common Core is the social and emotional learning, SEL, that has been in effect since about, well, how long ago, Van? Since 1990?
Mid-1990s is when it was first organized.
So please stay tuned. We're kind of taking you through a history of the educational system. I'm Judy Redlich. This is Encounter. What do you believe, and what are your children being taught? Come back, won't you?
This is Dr. T.D. Stubblefield with today's Meaningful Moment. After he placed the last of my bags in the trunk of the car, I gave the parking shuttle driver a tip. He took the cash and began walking toward his vehicle. His loud outburst of gratitude startled me. Surely he couldn't be that excited about a $2 tip. Exiting the parking lot, I realized what had happened. I did not give him the $2 I had planned, but had mistakenly given him the $20 bill I had set aside to pay the parking fee. He was overwhelmed with appreciation. Each day of our lives, we are blessed by the generosity of God, who is able to do above and beyond all we ask or think. So many times during my life, I have been surprised because God gave me so much more than I deserved or expected. I know you have experienced this too. Don't forget to say thank you.
Van Harvey is my guest. Thanks for joining me. This is Encounter. He's a father, and he's been looking at the educational issues and the history of education for a long time. And Van, we're talking about the Common Core. We're going to also talk about critical race theory. And we're going to talk about, we know that this stuff is happening in the public schools, but what about the private schools? How are kids going to private schools being affected by these same teachings and directives? So welcome back, and welcome back to you, our listeners. Van, you got a little bit of time to explain the other tenets of Common Core.
Well, the Common Core came about as the first program that got directly into parents' faces, essentially, saying that this is the way we're going to be teaching these things. We're going to be proposing deep learning and STEM, kind of science, technology, focused learning. And it's lots of wordings that sounded very nice and, oh, good, we're going to be going back to all these types of things. But what it actually worked about as is selectively kind of cherry picking facts and details out of history and literature and so forth to fit the agenda that was being pushed. The way they work it is something called semantic deception. They come out and will tell you that. There is a fellow named Henry Giroux who is a Marxist, although he doesn't like using the Marxist because that's too conservative a term for him. But he is responsible for putting over 100 professors on faculty at universities and teachers'
colleges. Oh, 100.
Yeah. And what the semantic deception is using common terms that have different meanings for those who are going to implement them. So they use our vocabulary and apply them with their definitions. And one example he likes to give is for conservatives. Looking at teaching, we think that, he says, teaching for many conservatives is often treated simply as a set of strategy and skills to use in order to teach specified subject matter. And he's great with that because what they do with it, on the other hand, critical pedagogy must be seen as a political and moral project, not a technique. Pedagogy is a deliberate attempt on the part of educators to influence how and what knowledge and subjectivities are produced within particular sets of social relations. That is what is being taught, especially since the mid-90s, through our teachers' colleges. Those teachers' colleges produce the teachers who teach in our public schools. They produce the people who are the administrators in our public schools. And they produce the teachers and administrators who are used in most of our private schools and church schools and so forth. So the idea of some of our legislators who in the recent hubbub over school choice have said things like, you know, we don't subscribe to their ideology. We just are working on our agenda and we can work together. Well, that's very fine and dandy. But the agenda that ends up being worked out is not what you think it is. The best example is a lesson that is used in the schools. A lady who got out of teaching in recent years, she came across a lesson that was essentially the classic kind of math word problem. So as if Johnny's going to go to the amusement park, he's got to drive 50 minutes to get there, and we're halfway into the drive, how long has he got to go? Okay, so yeah. You know, that's what's written out on the math worksheet. Parent looks at that, community members look at that, legislators look at that, and a great rigor, we're going to get some good stuff. What happens is the culturally responsive pedagogy, there are a number of different variations of that, teach the teachers to then engage with the students. Hey, kids, has everyone been to the amusement park? And inevitably, some hands won't raise. And then the discussion will go to, what are some reasons why a child might not go to an amusement park? And then they'll have some nice discussions about poverty, the unfairness of the capitalist system. What are some other reasons, kids? Oh, you don't have two parents. Ah, oh, you have two parents, but you have two mommies and two daddies. So let's discuss that. And there'll be a nice extended little wrap session on how this goes on. And that lesson plan that all the legislators and parents signed off as just a bang up, you know, discussion of math. We're going to be doing this. I did stuff in classroom, ends up teaching little or no math whatsoever, and thoroughly pushes the critical race theory pedagogy idea of what they want kids to believe.
Wow. Talk more about the critical race theory, would you?
Sure. Critical race theory was named by a lady named Kimberly Crenshaw, and she and a number of other self-declared Marxist activists had gotten together with different ways on how they can get a hold of the legal system, essentially. And she wrote this paper in the late 90s, and then the second part was Mapping the Margins in, I think, 93. And what it does, it works on the idea of taking ideas of balances of identity in different groups, and so that Black women and Latinos and gays and foreigners and so forth, instead of being looked at as individuals, are representatives of groups. And that's what the law has to be applied to in order to do something, produce fair results. The intersectionality, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and so forth, all of these came out of critical race theory. And what it allows them to do is gravitate away from what the initial presentation of it is, the semantic deception. So you talk about diversity. Okay, we're talking about nice fairness and so forth. Diversity sounds fair, but ends up being explicitly divisive. It takes we the people, bust them into groups who must be given particular attention in this and that. Equity is promises fairness, but it requires penalizing merit, cutting down the tall poppies to everyone's equal height. And inclusion, the promise of being welcoming to all, demands lists of words and actions that can no longer be said and words that must be used instead, like ridiculous things like master bedroom. In the real estate community, that became something you could get canceled over if you wrote up your real estate listing with master bedroom in it. And it's just something that insinuates itself into every aspect of our lives. Under the cover of seeming to be a fair and decent thing to do, knowing that its high aspirations have to be employed with an authoritarian mandate.
Van, as a parent is looking for a school to send their child to, what are the questions they should ask the administration and maybe some of the teachers in their considerations?
Do you have a DEI officer? That should be an immediate red flag that I am out. My kid is not going to the school.
What is that?
The DEI officer is the person who will employ diversity, equity, and inclusion ideas and make sure that all the curriculum and the teachers and the programs reflect these nice-sounding aspirations that will result in things like AP programs for top-quality students being eliminated because the lesser-able students might feel bad about it. So if you go to a school and they have a DEI officer and probably a staff to support them, what they're going to be doing is taking the ideals of diversity, equity, and inclusion under the idea of fairness, everyone is invited, but with the result of being the entire faculty and students will be dealt with as different types of groups, representative of different groups. So in the most concrete way that you experience this, so if you have a AP class, so the best students studying literature, history, so forth, who have the best scores and they look like the best prospects in the student body, the class is focused on nurturing their abilities. Those are axed, cut out of the school, because those students who can't operate at that level might feel bad about it. This happened in St. Charles in the Francis Howell area. I believe it happened in Lindbergh as well and throughout the area. It's a common thing. So the DEI office will say that we're all welcoming and we're going to be fair to everybody and we're going to include everybody. And it has to result in dividing the student body and the teachers and the parents into complete competing groups for those nice aspirational ideas of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
So we're really talking about not giving the accelerated students the chance to accelerate.
Exactly.
So that's one question. Do you have a DEI officer? What's another question?
How do you preach the founding of America? You look to 1619 or you look to 1776. If they're going towards America was founded on racism, that school is taken over already. You should go elsewhere.
Another question?
How are you going to tell me that a student is excelling in class or having a problem in class? How will I know that? And if they're coming back with, well, we have a number of surveys that we're always taking, you need to run away very quickly. That's not a place you want to be. Things like panorama surveys, which was related to our Attorney General, Merrick Garland, his son-in-law runs it. The surveys are sent out and SEL absolutely requires these surveys. It's the means of data collection and control. But kids 8 to 13 years old would be asked questions like, do you feel like a male or a female or something else? And the questions are, if not asked to the class out loud, they're reviewed, and persons' answers that don't conform are reviewed in class. And that's a way of dividing the student body and categorizing them and controlling it.
Ben, we don't have any more time. How can parents find out ways that they can get involved in their school systems to find out the issues and to know the truth and do the right thing?
There is Pete Hegseth and Daniel Goodwin's Battle for the American Mind, Jennifer McWilliams Consulting.com, James Lindsay's New Discourses is an excellent source, and Shield Maidens of Missouri, they've been very active in the recent school choice issues.
So, Van, where can they find these resources listed?
I've got a list of a number of them on my blog, which is blogodidact, blogspot.com, blogodidact.
Well, this is Judy Redlich. You've learned a lot today. It's up to you to explore. What are your kids really learning? Where are they learning it? And how can you make a difference as a parent? I'm Judy Redlich. This is Encounter. Van Harvey has been my guest. Thanks for tuning in.
This has been Encounter with Judy Redlich, informing listeners on local Christian events and matters that affect your lives. Spread the word and invite people to listen to Encounter on KSIV or online at botradionetwork.com.
If you've listened to me at any time at all, or you've been friends with me, you know that I love to help people tell their story. Another thing I enjoy doing is helping people find their highest potential. If you're in a life's rut and you just can't figure out how to get past your stuck place, a life coach like me could help. Let me walk with you through your journey of transition. I'm a Christian life coach, and to find out more about my coaching, go to my coaching page at judyredlich.com or email me at jredlichspeaks@gmail.com.
Check out more of Judy's interviews at judyredlich.com. That's JUDYREDLICH.com. Or email her at judyredlichspeaks@gmail.com. Friend her on Facebook, connect with her on LinkedIn. And if you want to learn how your business could be a sponsor on Judy Redlich's website, email her at jredlichspeaks@gmail.com.